Hello, everyone. Josh Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. With me is Thomas Harper, and we're going to geek out over the return of Clone Wars. Clone Wars saved, and we're all grateful. So let's talk about the Bad Batch. Thomas, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little disappointed that the United States Army didn't give me any like genetic super mutations. But honestly, I've been carrying that burden since watching Captain America. The first Avenger for the first time 10, 11 odd years ago. So I'll just stay salty.
Yeah, we don't do experiments on people anymore, should probably be noted. And that's
more is the key word there.
We haven't in a long time, and we regret the unpleasantness that happened earlier. So not good. How lawsuits are born. So anyway, yes. Let's just general observations. What'd you think of the return?
It was surprising how familiar it felt. And that's a credit to the showrunners. It's when the logo came on and you heard like the fanfare, the music, and then the announcer kind of giving the backstory as they do Tom Kane in the first part of each episode. It felt like the clocks had rolled back to 2011, 2012, and we were getting what we should have gotten back then. It was just funny. I just sat there thinking like, did I just pop in a DVD of the show? Like, I don't know. It felt, it's a credit to the team because it was very seamless.
I agree with that. The animation felt a little different, though, looking at Mace Windu and Anakin. Did you sense anything different there, that it just, they looked different?
Anakin's hair was flowing. I noticed that. It had some bounce to it, some wiggle. I read an article that put it better than I can. It said that at times the animators were almost showing off. Like they were, obviously the capabilities of their tech has increased exponentially in 8 or 9 years, and they didn't have any problem showing that to the audience. And I love that.
Yeah, we're gonna spike the football, so buckle up.
Well, I mean the other than Anakin's hair, the scene that comes to mind is their assault on the data center, and as they sweep into the building, I mean, just the tracking shots that were following the clones and swinging around as they took out battle droids. Like you saw some of that toward the end of the original series, but this is leaps and bounds. I mean, this is like you're watching, you know, Taken or John Wick or some other action movie.
Agreed. The skills in animating this are pretty phenomenal. And, you know, the story was solid. And it's also a reminder that you can do stories without Jedi. We see to at the beginning, but how many lines does Anakin have at the beginning? Just next to none. You know, it's a clone story, and it just highlights that you can have stories like The Mandalorian or Cassian Andor or whatever will come next movie-wise, and people will be there, popcorn in hand, and grateful.
And that's a really good point, because they could have easily taken, you know, this is one of a handful of episodes that they're going to have in this final season. They could have looked at this and said, we need something to grab audiences back to get that, you know, to bring out the heavy hitting main characters and suck audiences back into this world, reintroduce them to it. But instead what they did was they picked up, if you were at Celebration, what was that? Either 2010 or 2013, I think. Or if you've seen the special features in the Blu-ray release, this episode or a version of it in this story arc had already been debuted. They had, when the show got canceled, they were already well into developing this season. So they had all the audio, all the dialogue recorded. The visuals were not done. They were like pre-viz sort of models where the characters just sort of float across the ground. They're not moving at all. And like their limbs or anything like that aren't moving. But I remember watching that And I was like, where, like, why did we not get this arc? And so when they announced that this is where they were starting this final season, I couldn't have been happier.
It worked for me, you know, and I don't remember what happened to Echo with the Citadel. Do you? So
you think he's blown up. So there's the landing pad and Echo is defending the crew, you know, the survivors, I should say, Tarkin and Anakin and Ahsoka, as Plo Koon is rescuing everyone. Definitely. And he dies in a fiery explosion. They set up a bomb on the little, the shuttle there at the landing pad. And so the last Rex sees of him, he thinks he's dead in the explosion.
Okay. All right, that now comes. Okay, yeah, I actually rewatched that when Disney Plus launched, because that was one of the seasons I don't have either on disc or iTunes. So yeah, that was one of the seasons I didn't get. Okay, all right, that fills in that blank of what happened to him. and we learned that something did happen to him. So that brings us to, let's talk about some of the law that we can pick up on this. And one thing that jumped out at me at the issue, you know, beginning was the analytics discussion. And so, you know, Rex deploys strategy, droids learn it, and strategy gets less effective. And, you know, they eventually start countering whatever the clone troopers are doing. What they're talking about with analytics is something that we do in electronic discovery and reviewing, you know, electronically stored information in a lawsuit. And it goes by several names. Like, it used to be predictive coding. Now they're using AI for artificial intelligence, because that's the latest it girl for marketing. You know, they've used big data, but at the heart of it, it's predictive analytics and specifically continuous active learning. So when you do document review, as you're making coding decisions, when you're tagging something as relevant, if it's responsive to request for production 27, other coding that you could put in, maybe it's, like say tender letters to a carrier, you know, however have your issue coding set up, the system will learn from your coding decisions and thus be able to start identifying similar content that you can look at that has a high likelihood of being relevant. That's effectively what the separatists were doing with Rex's strategy. And I thought that was cool for them to talk about it. And it also highlights, you know, current trends in technology where people hear AI, you know, AI can predict heart attacks. Okay, how? Explain that. You know, what's going on here? And in this case, it seems to be predicting Rex's battle plans with a high degree of precision, which is all, again, so much predictive coding language can come into that from different document review applications. So that put a smile on my face right at the get-go of this and endeared it to me.
It made me think, and I'm going to cross the streams here, but it instantly made me think of the Borg in Star Trek. And the failure long term of certain tactics or weapons as the Borg just adapt.
There's that. I also thought of hyperspace tracking. To jump back to they're adapting, but yeah.
I promise I won't go rogue into another franchise again.
If you're playing bingo, so I'm sure there's a Doctor Who reference in there that we could work in as well. So. Agreed. There's a couple different ways to do it. Because again, hyperspace tracking was supposed to be based upon kind of an AI predictability of where they could be headed from point A to some other past known rebel base. If I'm getting the description of hyperspace tracking, which I think was in one of the visual dictionaries, does that sound remotely ballpark to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think description that I recall is the computer is so big, you're effectively creating a bit of space in a vacuum there on the ship so that you can, the computer can map out all these potential routes. So that's why it requires its own dedicated power source, as Rose pointed out in The Last Jedi.
Oh, cool. Good deep cut. So let's get into things that lawyers notice. So when Clone Force 99 comes in, they come in with a really rough landing and people are jumping out of the way. And
Top Gun style.
Yeah, one that seemed completely unnecessary. Two, that's a great way to end up with the epitaph, killed by own troops in Vietnam. And like they were completely unnecessary. So, you know, Mr. JAG officer, does that like sound like hazarding a vessel or, you know, some other spin on that and endangering the lives of the people on the ground by coming in hot and, you know, just being a schmuck when it comes to landing with active personnel on the ground?
Yeah, and you had this pegged in the outline, and I was so happy that you had pulled it out because it's not often used. The Army has some vessels, and vessels doesn't just mean a ship. I think you say that word, and it brings to mind a boat, but it doesn't have to be just a boat. It could be an aircraft or something like that. So certainly their ship, which is called the Havoc Marauder, by the way, and if they stay true to form, if my memory serves me, it does have a pinup of Padme on it, not in a demeaning way, but the story was the clones really respected her fight and her tenacity. So that was the symbol, I should say, that they selected to ride into battle with. So
like nose art, like of her riding a
ball? No, yeah, nose art is probably a better term than pinup art. I just say pinup art because it evokes the noses of like a World War II bomber or a World War II fighter plane that had it on there. But two basic elements here that you're talking about. One, that you wrongfully and willfully hazarded a vessel of the armed forces or allowed it to be hazarded. And then secondly, you could have negligently hazarded the vessel or negligently allowed it to be hazarded. So you don't necessarily have to be in control of the vessel to have it done. Here you've got a vessel of the armed forces. The Galactic Republic owns that ship. It's not the property of those clones. Arguably, the clones themselves are the property of the Galactic Republic or Jedi Council, depending on who foot the full bill, I guess. But hazard is a technical term here, and it really refers to putting the vehicle in danger of damage or loss. You don't actually have to have damaged the vehicle or lost the vehicle to have that happen. So the idea here is you don't have to wreck it to be liable. The Army or the military in general wants to be able to put their hooks in you if you're just acting stupid. And so here, coming in low like that, I mean, there were no circumstances that really called for it, right? So clearly whoever was behind the stick of that ship just wanted to get a rise out of all the people on the ground. They seemed to like to poke fun or needle the regs, as they called them, so the normal non-defective clones. And what better way to do it than swooping in low, like Nap of the Earth style, right over the landing strip. And they did that. You see crew members jump out of the way, and it's not as if they were under fire. They weren't being chased by separatist forces or anything like that. So there's no real justification here. And the moment the ramp drops down and you get introduced to this crew of a motley crew of clones, you understand exactly why they did it. So I don't think there's any question they willfully did it as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, I believe the legal term that everyone understands is it's a dick move. And
that's accurate.
It's like, dude, what's wrong with you? It's just, why did you endanger all those lives? People who jumped out of the way because they didn't want to get run over by the high-speed aircraft coming in without, there was no mechanical problem. It's not like it was on fire. It's not like it was crashing. It was, you know, we want to go scare the crap out of people on the ground. It's like, screw you guys. This is why people might not like you, because you're risking lives just because. Like, this isn't Maverick and Goose. This is something different. Which then gets into other things that we see with Clone Force 99, you know, the Bad Batch, with issues of insubordination. Now, there is like outright contempt of Captain Rex from three out of the four. I mean, Hunter being the exception. And, you know, like actual, like, you know, fisticuffs, you know, between, you know, the established clones and the Bad Batch that comes in. And like, that's just not cool. And I instantly think of issues of insubordination. And if you could put your JAG helmet on once again, I would like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I'll say this scene really evoked and kind of touched on whether the creators meant it or not. Something that actually I think happens is at least as an undercurrent in the real world military. I would equate Clone Force 99 to a special forces unit, so a non-conventional arm of the military. So treat them like a SEAL team if you want, or a something like that. Whereas the Captain Rex, Cody, Kix, and Jesse are all just normal infantry soldiers. They would be in a standard infantry unit. They might get attached to special forces at some points in time, like when they fought with Fives and Echo. Those would be like those were clone commandos, so they'd be like, you know, Rangers or Green Berets. But for the most part, they operate in standard conventional units. And in the real world, there can be a tension there. There's a tension over qualifications, who's better. There's sort of a friendly rivalry, if you will. I don't know that it at times boils into insubordination. But what it evoked for me is, if you've seen the movie Black Hawk Down, there's that scene where they're all having a cookout after the Delta Force team has gone out at the beginning of the movie, taken Blackhawks out and shot wild boar in Somalia, and they're cooking up these wild boar. And one of the infantry captains comes up, and he doesn't like the fact that they've used government resources to go on a hunt. And he confronts one of the Delta sergeants, and there's this tension that really kind of mirrors some of the tension that you see here. Rex and Cody have their way of doing things. Hunter and the rest of his team have their way of doing things. And from Hunter's point of view, they're always effective. Why would they need to change things? But because the military needs something called good order and discipline, that, you know, and by that I mean there's a rank structure, orders need to be followed, subordinate soldiers have to be able to follow unquestioningly at times the orders and directives of those who have been appointed above them. That's a critical and kind of a unique element. I mean, you don't, like, if you just kind of refuse to obey your boss's order in your job, you might get fired, but you're not going to get criminally charged, and certainly nobody's going to get killed or injured if you just refuse to go make some copies or whatever your boss is asking you to do. But it's very different in the military, and you see some of that play out in this episode, that they're dealing with sort of life and death situations. And that's why there's a criminal offense like insubordination that exists. And so here, it applies to any enlisted member. So Hunter is a sergeant, and presumably his entire team, that Clone Force 99, are all enlisted clones, as opposed to an officer like Cody or Rex. And if you're an enlisted member who strikes or assaults a warrant officer, non-commissioned officer, or petty officer, while that officer is in the execution of the office, or you willfully disobey a lawful order of a superior like that, or, and you see that play out here, you treat with contempt or are disrespectful in your language or deportment towards one of those superiors, you can be punished. And there's actually a second, a different article that's a little more serious for disobeying an officer, just because that the stakes are arguably a little higher as opposed to say disobeying like a senior sergeant. So that's what's in play here. And you know, it comes down to a judgment call. Like Rex would have been well within his rights to enforce something like this, but he's got to look out for his own command authority and like, and weigh the importance of getting the mission done. Are you going to kind of grind things to a halt by taking, you know, one of these commandos to task for not respecting you just because of your rank? That's just not how Rex decided to approach it.
Which again makes sense under the situation that they're in, you know, cause you know, when you're forward deployed, makes sense. Maybe you might want to deal with that later, but that's,
yeah. Well, there was, and funny enough, this article does get used quite often. It doesn't often make headlines, but there was actually a court martial that made headlines. At least I saw it. I am trying to think where, what installation it was out of, but it was a Marine. It was a young Lance Corporal, so a lower ranking junior enlisted Marine, who was put on court, who was court martialed, put on trial for punching his sergeant. And the defense was that the sergeant had egged him on. Basically, they were in an argument. The sergeant didn't like his this Lance Corporal's demeanor towards him, felt he was being disrespectful, and basically dared him and egged him on to hit him. And so he hit him and then gets court-martialed for it, and he got acquitted. And the ruling was that, if you invite that sort of violence upon yourself, effectively it got taken as an order to hit him. I think the way he said it, which is hilarious, because the court was able to find that the Lance Corporal was actually obeying his order to strike his superior. But so it happens, right? It's something that gets used. It doesn't often bubble up to the level of a court martial, like a criminal trial, but it happens. If not every day, nearly every day of the week on any given military installation.
Yes, joys of the military. Yeah, it's right. 19-year-olds who are armed to the teeth, and yeah, good times, good times. What could go wrong? So, all right. Well, we then get to the issue that we don't know the pure answer to. So we can really set it up, and I think whatever this arc shows us will ultimately reveal the answer with Echo, and whether or not is Echo collaborating with the Separatists, because we don't know exactly how he's transmitting, or you know, is it him? Is it, you know, did they download his mind? Like, what did you know? What's going on here? Is he a POW? Is he working with them intentionally? And it raises issues of collaboration. So, like, could you share your thoughts again from the JAG perspective, on could he be collaborating, or what would need to be shown to show he's collaborating?
Yeah. So this is probably, we just went from one of the, I won't call it like less serious arms of the UCMJ, because insubordination can be pretty serious, but now insubordination, misconduct or misbehavior before the enemy, sedition, you're into the deep end of the UCMJ and some of the most serious crimes. These are things that are capital offenses. There's an undercurrent in that deep end of offenses that deal with, misdeeds with the enemy, whether it's collaboration, spying, that sort of thing, basically taking actions that aid or abet the enemy. And probably right up there with murder and rape. These are some of the most serious offenses in the UCMJ. And so there is a provision, and you don't see it oftentimes used, but there is a provision for dealing with folks who collaborate with the enemy. And a lot of this is going to depend on, or I guess proving the case is going to depend on the same two things that are at play and important in every criminal case: mens rea and actus reus. So what actions is Echo taking to aid the enemy? We seem to have seen that. You saw in the data center within this episode here that they've heard his voice, so they've heard his identifying clone number. Rex is able to pick that out and recognizes that it's him. And there's certainly there's enough there that Rex positively identifies Echo beyond even his clone number. His fellow soldier from the from Clone Force 99 Tech can't really make heads or tails of it, but Rex knows these codes. Rex knows what he's hearing, and he's able to decipher it. Certainly assisting the enemy in strategy and adapting to the Republic's strategies, whether that be providing them with what is probably presumably classified information in terms of battle strategies and things that the Republic does to or tendencies so that they can be countered. That's absolutely would meet the Actus Reus. But the question, Josh, that you touched on, I think goes to Mens Rea, because we don't know his situation. If you've watched the episodes, if you saw it premiere, if you've seen the previous episodes and the special features, you know where this whole thing is going. But right now we don't know. And I think Rex is like rightfully shaken, because the last he saw was this explosion on the landing pad and his buddy getting killed. But we've seen clones turn in this series and assist the Separatists before. The episode that comes to mind is The Hidden Enemy from season 2 or 3, where you've got that this sort of cat and mouse game in the barracks, and a clone called Slick, as ironic as that is actually feeding information to Asajj Ventress, and Rex and Cody of all clones are trying to hunt down and figure out who's feeding this information over. And they finally corner Slick, and Slick's explanation is like, well, they promised me freedom. So, and that's just one example. So it is not unheard of for a clone to turn coat and assist the Separatists. So, I wouldn't count Echo as being some sympathy case just yet, because he might be following in the footsteps of some of his more infamous brothers.
Yeah, we just don't know. And I'm sure we'll find out what's happened to him. Because again, that transmission, it sounded like a slow record for those who have seen a record player and know what that is. But it sounded like it was played like a couple speeds slower than somebody would normally talk. So what's going on there? Are they, is this an issue of torture? Is he being augmented in some way? So there's a few things there of how's this going to play out. So right now we don't have a good answer, other than collaboration needs to be on the table for he could be collaborating. So there's a difference between being used as slave labor as a POW than being in their war room giving feedback.
Yeah, and this stuff, it seems far-fetched. It seems crazy to think, how could a service member ever do something like this? But it happens in real life. They had the Navy not too long ago, within the last 5 years, had a senior ranking officer that was charged and tried for collaborating and passing secrets to the Chinese. And even more recently than that, you had the case of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, the longtime POW in Afghanistan. And while he was not ever convicted of any kind of misbehavior before the enemy or any kind of actions that would have been treasonous, certainly he was accused of assisting the Taliban on some level in their efforts to fight U.S. forces in Afghanistan. So they tend to make these big cases. John Walker Lind is another one, although he wasn't a service member, but it happens from time to time, and it's always the consequences for the accused are always the most serious, but a lot of these cases carry with it some of the most serious damage to not just individual soldiers, but to U.S. efforts and U.S. national security.
Agreed. And I was just doing Google searches based upon memories from spy novels and history that I've read over the years. And it should be noted there's a difference between like somebody like John Walker and John Walker Lind, which again, that doesn't get confusing. You know, Walker was a Navy Chief Warrant officer who gave communications info to the Soviet Union from 68 to 85. And like, there's a high probability that that intel was used coupled with the equipment and code books that they got from the ship captured by the North Koreans and thus used to kill the USS Scorpion. So, and there are those who blame Walker for the, you know, the loss of the USS Scorpion. There are other examples as well as like Aldrich Ames, but the difference here is like those guys are pure turncoats who were spies. Like it falls into that category as opposed to captured and start collaborating. And that could be more of the, you know, you think of people who were POWs, think somebody in the Hanoi Hilton who was openly collaborating, or in a German POW camp who's starting to give, you know, allied information away. I don't have any good examples of that offhand.
The Star Wars universe has one of those. It depends on how you view the situation, but in the recent Jedi Fallen Order game, you have the case of the Jedi Master that Cal Kestis kind of aligns with, or she's not a Jedi Master, Jedi Knight, former Knight, Seer Junda. She gets captured and is tortured by the Inquisitorius and ends up giving up some information that leads to the capture of her Padawan, and her Padawan sort of infamously is turned into an Inquisitor. But I guess one of the things that I love about Star Wars is that it doesn't shy away from really heavy topics like this, because it's some of the most compelling storytelling that you can have.
And it's also the benefit of the serialized storytelling, because they really don't hit this stuff in the movies. You know, some of the intellectual issues addressed in the films are just high level, and it's just kind of like a quick drive-by. I mean, it's just like they're waving at an issue of, hey, redemption, I talked to the memory of my dad and everything's okay now. Okay, like that would have been a good thing to have like a deeper discussion about, but it happened quickly. And when you're dealing with a TV series, you know, they're able to follow the Star Trek example of they can go deeper, you know, and in those 22-minute episodes, they can cover more ground over a 3-story arc that addresses these issues. And it also helps that, you know, this is a limited number of characters. I'm like, there are the good guys and the bad guys, but, you know, basically we have a core team of 8 characters who are all together, and some get a little bit more airtime than others. So you have, you know, main and characters and secondary characters, but that's a lot easier to follow than everyone being broken up. So it's good guys, bad guys, and you can talk about these issues, which again, why I love the Clone Wars, because this is something aimed at little kids. And, you know, we're lawyers talking about this. And we know there are others who are in this category of, you know, probably people in their 60s who were Star Wars fans from, you know, 77, who are thinking about what's depicted in these stories. So, I did get out some of my Black Series Clone Wars swag that I have. And I might have been holding my Galaxy's Edge lightsaber while watching this, but I will not confirm nor deny that. And, but yeah, I'm very grateful to have it back on.
And I guess Hasbro delivered the goods yesterday or the day before at their Toy Fair live stream with all the new Clone Wars toys coming down the pipe. I think we've just seen the tip of the sword, so to speak, but or tip of the iceberg. I get my metaphors mixed up, but I had to really resist running immediately to my computer and pre-ordering all the new clones and the new Ahsoka that's coming out and the whole 9 yards.
I only saw because again, this might surprise people. We actually text news back and forth. But there was the Snow Speeder, you know, black series for the 6-inch figures coming out.
It looks so good.
Oh God. I mean, it's just, that's a fitting gift for either of my brothers or myself. Just, especially my brother, who's just 3 years younger, because, and like, we grew up with that. Like, we have, you know, Christmas 1980, you know, we got an AT-AT and we each got a Snow Speeder, and lots of fun was had with those. So it's like that instant, that'd be a very fine gift for Christmas or a birthday. Mm-hmm. And because again, it's appropriate. You know, I saw the previews for, this goes back a few months, but the Count Dooku Black Series. I want one of those. And I don't know when it's going to come out, but eventually we'll get the Count Dooku lightsaber. That's the FX. And I definitely want one of those just because it's so different. I mean, I do feel Christopher Lee was underused in the prequel films. They do make up for that in the animated series. But when it comes to Sith Lords, Dooku is the only one who's not like, just like this pacing animal consumed with rage. You know,
it's very true.
He's regal. You know, Count is well used to describe him because it's Christopher Lee. And, you know, even that's what the animated version is based off of this, you know, high society gentleman with extreme skills who's gone to the dark side. And, you know, like Maul wasn't like that. Vader wasn't like that. Kylo Ren wasn't like that. So it's, you know, on one level, it's nice to see difference between the bad guys. So yay. But always impressed with that version of a bad guy who's different, who's not scarred, who's, you know, still has that classic gentleman look, but he's really, really bad.
Oh, yeah. You hit the nail on the head. He's one of my favorite characters of the entire Clone Wars show. And if you haven't listened to the audio drama by Kevin Scott called Dooku Jedi Lost, I highly recommend it. It gives a introduction into his backstory, his time as a young Padawan, and the timeline sort of bounces between present in the Clone Wars and his time as a Padawan training under Master Yoda. But it's phenomenal. It touches on all the stuff that Josh is talking about, how he's sort of cut from a different cloth, even as a Padawan, as he discovers some of the stuff about his own past. And really builds his character up. So I have no doubt that in the coming weeks, we're going to be analyzing some Count Dooku legal issues, which makes me very excited.
Absolutely. It's, again, beauty of the, you know, TV series. They're able to get into more issues with him and see him do more, you know, kind of like the way that we saw a little bit more with Tarkin and Rebels, that, you know, don't waste a perfectly evil bad guy who's just so ruthless, and there's just a lot there. So again, grateful. What other goodies were announced yesterday that we should be aware of that could be good stocking stuffers? Or I like to watch for birthday presents and Christmas gifts all year long, so like that's my that's how I roll of that way you don't break the piggy bank come December shopping for folks. If you get something in March for your close friend, you wrap That's it and right. put it in the closet. It's what grandma did. It worked well. I follow that life pattern.
I think the thing that broke the internet nearly was the animatronic Baby Yoda, the little $50 one. I mean, that thing, I think they sold out of pre-orders already, which is unheard of for a toy. And we're not near, what are we, like 10 months away from Christmas, and you got a toy that's selling out before it's even hit the shelves. So
that's awesome.
I won't call that a surprise, but it was very cute.
Oh, I love America. So that's That's awesome. Okay. Again, not surprised. That makes lots of sense. Teach me to be busy working on other things all day yesterday.
No surprise that the big focus this year is on the 40th anniversary of Empire. And so they've got some retro figures that are being released that are like the kind of remolds of the original 1980 figures. But, you know, obviously, and they're set on the old card backs. So they look vintage style. They did that in a limited run for A New Hope, but you didn't see much of those on the shelves. There's a new, well, I don't know if they've retooled it at all, but a Slave One in the vintage collection that's coming out. If it's, even if it's the same model that they released in like 2013, 2014, it's huge and it's awesome. So that's really cool.
I had that. I had a lot of the toys from Empire, not all, but a lot. And I did have a Slave One, and it had a nice handle in the back that made for play easy to run around the backyard. And, that's cool.
They've got Lego didn't have much at the like at Toy Fair, but they did announce in September or October the Razor Crest is coming, and it will have a Baby Yoda minifig, Baby Yoda Grief. It'll have Mando and IG-11.
Okay.
Figures for it, so the whole crew. We won't talk about Queel or Kara. You can get them elsewhere, but
yeah. And you know how many of blurgs can you get that are when will those be available?
And the last thing that I was hugely excited about, although they have not officially announced or shown like an image of it, Lego has these big Ultimate Collector Series sets, like the Star Destroyer is the big one that's out right now for Star Wars. They had a fan vote. It was between on the vote was for what was going to be the next UCS model. And it was between the Nebulon B frigate. So the medical frigate that you see in Return of the Jedi and in Empire Strikes Back, the TIE bomber or the Republic gunship, taking a page out of the prequels and the Clone Wars. The gunship won, which I was very excited about. I would have loved to see the frigate because it's just such a cool design. But the Republic gunship is going to be the next UCS model that comes out. Probably, I would guess, later this year. Maybe a pre-order at Celebration. They did that with the Tana V4.
That makes sense. I, God, like those are some wonderful designs. those were a lot of, okay, that's pretty cool. Again, being the smart aleck that I am, I would love to see, we could start an online petition or movement for a Black Series B. Arthur from the holiday special. I don't remember the name of her character, but that would be, thank you, Google, Akmina.
Yeah.
Again, maybe we could start tweeting that out because I think people would rally towards that. It might have the negative effect of adding canon to, the holiday special, but, maybe somebody like Favreau would champion that.
I like it.
Yeah.
We'll first see it in canon and then we'll get the Lego set. It'll be like that Yoda Lego that looks slightly creepy and off, like the big bulbous eyes.
Yeah, the stuff of nightmares. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Know it well. Well, cool. Well, this has been fun to talk about the return of Clone Wars, and what we'll be able to do this weekly. And this is an exciting time since we have both new Star Trek and new Star Wars coming out. That are going to overlap. So
yeah,
for a brief time.
Tear our allegiances.
Yeah, again, it's just we're showing things that we love. This is why we podcast. We like this stuff, so we're going to talk about it. So, but yes, that's a great time to be a nerd. And God bless us, everyone.
Well said.
So, well, Thomas, be well. Thank you for everyone for tuning in. So again, we have a Patreon. We do have some mini podcasts there that haven't been talked about on our main podcast. And so you can check that out. And we just do a flat fee of $5. So you can be of counsel. And we'll might play with that some more, but that's what we have right now. If you enjoy us, please leave a review, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or any of the other services that we use to share our podcast. And everyone, stay geeky, America.